Rise and shine, everyone. How's it going out there? This is Amy, and it is time for Amy's Kids Show. And I am so excited to be here today for episode number 170. 170, and today we are going to continue to celebrate Benjamin Franklin and his electric curiosity, because he had electric curiosity. He was curious about just about everything, and he explored the world around him to the maximum. Wow, I mean, this was a guy who ran away at 14 or something to go start his own, you know, life, and then ran across the ocean when he was still very young and met a famous inventor, you know, went out and said, I'm going to meet this famous inventor and made it happen. I mean, he made the best of the world that he had. And if we think about the world that he had to work with, well, things were way more limited than they are right now. You know, like, I think back to when I was a kid, and I used to like to do my book reports. I would make up my own book reports. I would just research a subject like I am right now, Ben Franklin, and I would look everywhere I could for information about it. And back then, when I was a kid, really all I had was the Encyclopedia Britannica, which I thought was amazing. It had all kinds of information in it, right? And when Ben Franklin was a kid, you know, he had to read books and he had to write with a quill. If he wanted to write a letter, he had to use a feather, a quill, to write a letter. And then he had to put it in an envelope and put it, I don't know, on a horse, right? Somebody with a horse would travel with that letter. And then if he had to cross the ocean with the letter, it would have to go across the ocean in a ship with sails. I mean, we didn't even have motorboats back then, right? So the letter would have to sail across the ocean. And for him, that was actually pretty amazing, because world travel and world mail was still a new thing. He was excited just to be able to do that. So this whole time that I have been studying and learning about Benjamin Franklin and how he helped us understand electricity and learn what it is so that we can use it, I'm wondering, what would he think if he could sit here right now in the station with me, in the radio station, and be right here at the other microphone? What would he think and what would he say about the ways we can communicate now using his invention, right? Electricity, using the thing that he discovered so much about and helped a lot of other people learn about, so that I could be talking to you over the radio right now. It's a great big world, folks, and we're happy to be here with you.
Everybody lives on a street, in a city or a village or a town for what it's worth. And they're all inside a country which is part of a continent that sits upon a planet known as Earth. And the Earth is a ball full of oceans and some mountains, which is out there spinning silently in space. And living on that Earth are the plants and the animals and also the entire human race. It's a great big universe and we're all really puny. We're just tiny little specks about the size of Mickey Rooney. It's big and black and icky and we are small and dinky. It's a big universe and we're not. We're part of a vast interplanetary system stretching 700 billion miles long. With 9 planets and a sun, we think the Earth's the only one that has life on it, although we could be wrong. Across the interstellar voids are a billion asteroids, including meteors and Halley's Comet, too. And there's over 50 moons floating out there like balloons in a panoramic trillion-mile view. And still it's all a speck amid 100 billion stars in a galaxy we call the Milky Way. It's 60,000 trillion miles from one end to the other, and still that's just a fraction of the way. 'Cause there's 100 billion galaxies that stretch across the sky, filled with constellations, planets, moons, and stars. And still the universe extends to a place that never ends, which is maybe just inside a little jar.
It's a great big universe, and we're all really puny. We're just tiny little specks about the size of Mickey Rooney. Though we don't know how we got here, we're important part here. It's a big universe.
or LED, go with the flow. Resistors make it slow, wouldn't you know? It travels at the speed of light, wouldn't you know? A shock can give quite a fright. Things aren't what they used to be, thanks to electricity. Things aren't what they used to be at all. Things aren't what they used to be, thanks to electricity. Things aren't what they used to be at all. Start with a spark. Lightning from the clouds, start with a spark. A jolt of static power, revolting volts. Wicked watts know what's what, revolting volts. Can get quite hot. Things aren't what they used to be, thanks to electricity. Things aren't what they used to be at all. Things aren't what they used to be, thanks to electricity. Things aren't what they used to be at all. Charge up your cells. From water, wind, or sun, charge up your cells. From coal or gas or oil, light a light bulb. Like Thomas Edison, light a light bulb. A series or a parallel one. Things aren't what they used to be, thanks to electricity. Things aren't what they used to be at all. Things aren't what they used to be, thanks to electricity. Things aren't what they used to be at all.
American Revolution, a mini-series starring all your friends from Sesame Street, telling the story of how the United States of America was born, more or less. Today's episode of the American Revolution will be about Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence after John Adams and Benjamin Franklin gave him some help. We take you now to Thomas Jefferson in his study.
You see, I must write the Declaration of Independence. And since this is 1776, I need a quill, because that's what we write with. Quills, like I have in my hand. Ah, I'll just dip it here in the inkwell. Fine, and now to begin. Oh, no! I broke my quill! I broke my quill! I cannot write the Declaration of Independence without my quill. Oh, I'll never be able to write the Declaration of Independence. Never, never.
Mr. Jefferson, sir? How is it going with the Declaration of Independence, sir?
Terrible. Oh. I broke my quill.
Oh, no.
I can't write the Declaration of Independence without my quill. Oh. I need a quill, Mr. Grover. I need a quill.
Of course you do, sir. Have no fear. Mr. Grover shall get you one now.
Oh, I'll never write without a quill. Never. Never.
Mr. Jefferson. Sir, here you are, sir. Just what you asked for. A drill.
Drill?
Sir, yes.
Drill?
Yes.
I didn't say drill. I said quill. Quill!
Well, yes, sir. I just thought you said drill.
No, I did not. I said quill. Oh, it's true. Drill rhymes with quill. Yes. They sound the same, but but I didn't say drill.
Yes.
I said quill. Sir, I need a quill.
Yes, sir. Well, I can understand how emotional you can get about this. I will be back, sir, with whatever the quill.
I'll never write the Declaration of Independence without a quill. Never. Never.
Mr. Jefferson. Here we are, sir. Here we are. Just for you, as you asked.
A chicken?
Mm-hmm.
A chicken.
Yes, sir, right here.
You brought me a chicken?
That I did.
How could you have made a mistake like that? Chicken doesn't even rhyme with quill. Chicken doesn't even sound like quill.
No, but sir, this chicken's name is Phil. And Phil does rhyme with quill. A Phil, Tom, Phil.
Yes, well, how do you...
No, 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 get that chicken out of here! I can't write with a chicken!
Yes, sir, I am just a humble colonist doing my best, sir. Come on, let's go. Don't fight, please! Sorry, sir, please!
Oh, I'll never write the Declaration of Independence. Never.
What's this? Why, it's one of Phil's feathers. What luck! A quill! For after all, a quill is nothing but a feather. Oh, I shall be able to write the Declaration of Independence after all. Mr. Grover! Grover!
Yes, sir!
Thank you. I shall be able to write the Declaration of Independence after all.
Well, no need to thank me, sir. Thank Phil.
Why, thank you, Phil.
He says you're welcome.
Now, let me see.
Ah, you're going to write?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Dip into the inkwell.
Mm-hmm. How are you starting this?
Once upon a time.
Could I offer a suggestion?
Why, certainly.
Actually, it's Phil's idea. What was it? All right. When in the course of human events...
Oh, by George the Third, you've got it! When?
And so, Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, which declared the original 13 colonies to be free from England.
Well, folks... There it is, right? I guess it was not just Benjamin Franklin who helped write the Declaration of Independence with Thomas Jefferson, right? Who else helped Thomas Jefferson? Well, Mr. Grover just did, apparently, by helping Thomas find his quill. He needed a quill in order to write anything back then, really. He needed a feather. A feather, a special feather. There were all sorts of opinions about which types of feathers were better. Some said crow feathers were the best, others said turkey feathers, and apparently Mr. Grover, or Phil the chicken, felt that chicken feathers were best. And who knows, maybe the Declaration of Independence was written with a chicken feather quill. But we know it was written with a quill. That part we know for sure. And how would one write with a quill? With a feather? Well, they wouldn't use the soft, fuzzy part of the feather. They would use the pointy, stiff part at the other end. The part that would stick into the chicken or the bird. And because that part is hard and stiff. And they would cut it in a certain way, sometimes on an angle, sometimes with a slit in it. They came up with all sorts of creative ways to make this quill hold the ink just right. Because they would dip it into a bottle of ink, and then they would write with it. But the ink would wear off on the papers they were writing, so they'd have to keep dipping and keep dipping and keep dipping. And then, oh my goodness, if they made a mistake, there was no erasing. I guess they would have to cross it out. I imagine people really thought really hard before they started writing back then, because it was so difficult, you know, to do. It took a lot of effort. And for folks to come together and share their ideas, right? Like Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and the other folks who helped write the Declaration of Independence. Well, they were passing these letters, these drafts of the letter back and forth with each other and reading them, right? I mean, that's how they communicated with each other, through these letters. And then once they had something they really liked, they thought it was written really well to their liking, they might use a printing press, right? If they wanted to make more than one copy of it, then they would put it in a printing press. Well, they'd have to actually put each letter in to the printing press. That's a whole other complicated procedure, right? So these were all inventions that humans have made over time by putting our heads together. Was it just one person who invented the quill and the ink jar, right? No. It was lots of humans over lots of time experimenting and sharing their ideas and communicating their ideas. So for Benjamin Franklin and his friends, it was really exciting that they could do these things, that they could use a printing press to make lots of copies of words and then Even copies of pictures. That's something that Ben Franklin was like the first person to do. He invented a way to take a drawing and print it through the printing press so people could see, believe it or not, a kind of comic. It was, you know, a cartoon sort of was what he was, you know, printing back then. And so he was very busy. He did a lot of writing of lots of things. He wrote for his own newspaper and other people's newspapers. He wrote his own almanacs and books and cartoons. His first almanac was called the Poor Richard's Almanac. And that was how he made some money, right, to get started in his life so he could start his own printing press. So he tried all sorts of things. And I just find it very interesting that for him to share his ideas, it was so much harder back then than it is now. He would have to write it down in a letter, right, and then seal that letter using wax. They didn't even have those little licky envelopes back then. They had to use wax, heat the wax, drip it on there, seal the envelope. And if he wanted to send it to the world, like say across the ocean to England, which is where he was sending his experimental ideas, right? He would write them down and send them to these other scientists, and well, they weren't even called scientists back then. They were more like inventors and experimenters. And he would send them over there to the British Royal Society and share his ideas with them. And so I was reading about that part of his life when he was writing those letters and sending them all the way across the ocean. It would take months, like maybe 3 months or even more, for his letter to get to where he was sending it over in England. And then would he know that they got it? No, he would have no way of knowing if the letter arrived or it got lost, right? And then he'd have to wait who knows how long for a reply back. I mean, it could take years to have just a simple conversation, which nowadays we do with just a little email exchange, right? Or a phone call or a text message. We cannot even imagine how long it took back then and how patient you had to be. Well, how did I learn about all this, and how am I imagining what it was like back then? Well, I'm reading this book that I had on my shelf, and it's called A Dangerous Engine by Joan Dash. And I'm reading this because it's about Benjamin Franklin's life, and Joan does a really good job in this book explaining some of these amazing details, which really makes it easy to imagine, or easier to imagine what it was like to live back then with Ben in the old days before electricity changed so much, right? Things ain't what they used to be thanks to electricity, and that's why we're celebrating it today. And we're celebrating Ben Franklin, who helped us understand what it is. Well, it turns out that back when Ben Franklin was doing his experiments with electricity, so were lots of other people on the planet, not just him. It was happening all over, kind of spontaneously, which I think is sort of magical, right? The people all around were sort of experimenting with the same idea. And so I find it very interesting that Ben Franklin, because he was new to being a scientist, he was probably about 50 years old, but this was a new thing for him. You know, he had done lots of other things, you know, invented, you know, owned his own printing press and invented a bunch of stuff, right? But being an electrical scientist, you know, and doing this kind of research was new. So he was not very confident about it. He was just sort of guessing. I mean, nobody even knew what this stuff was. What is this stuff that makes the sparks happen and makes static electricity? And what makes things stick with the static stuff? I mean, they didn't even know what it was or how it worked. So he was just sort of fumbling around doing these experiments. And he was sending letters back and forth across the ocean. And here's what Joan has to say about the day that he started writing a letter he had postponed for a while. Here we go. It's called At Home in the Laboratory. The day came when Franklin sat at a writing desk, which in the 18th century would have been furnished with an inkwell, sand to dry the ink, a stick of sealing wax, a freshly cut quill pen, some paper, and a candle. What do you think the candle was for? He started the letter promised months ago to a scientist across the ocean named Peter Collinson. Here's what Ben wrote. In my last letter, I informed you that in pursuing our electrical inquiries, we had observed some particular phenomena which we looked upon to be new and of which I promised to give you some account. Though I apprehended they might possibly not be new ideas to you, as so many hands are daily employed in electrical experiments on your side of the water. Now, what does Ben mean by that, right? Well, first of all, let's start with your side of the water. What is that? Well, he's talking about England. That's what they used to call, they'd have to cross the Atlantic Ocean. So your side of the water is over where you are. And Ben's saying, I thought I had invented something new or discovered something new about electricity when I wrote to you last time. But it turns out it was not new. It turns out that probably you all over there across the water already knew about what I discovered. So he was actually, guys, he was kind of embarrassed. And you know what he was thinking? He was thinking, oh, geez, I wish I could take my last letter back, right? The letter that I sent 6 months ago. Across the ocean, and he's feeling embarrassed. He's feeling like, oh my goodness, what if they've opened this letter and they're laughing at me, right? He has no idea. So I just find it interesting that he had the same sorts of wonderings that we had, right? That we have still. he was new to this, but he had courage. He had courage to keep communicating and keep experimenting and being embarrassed sometimes, because when we try new things, we definitely make mistakes. That's part of it. And speaking of trying new things, I want us to also imagine what are these people saying? Like when they talk back then, when we read Ben Franklin's writings, it can be hard to understand what he's saying today, because not only did they have different ways of communicating, like they used quill pens instead of computers, right? But they also used different words and different phrases. And part of celebrating Ben Franklin, I think, should include celebrating his most famous writing of all. And I would say that was probably the Declaration of Independence, which, of course, he did not write alone. Of course, right? He wrote it with Thomas Jefferson and some other folks. But I have a great song coming up where they're going to sing the words to the Declaration of Independence. And I realized, will our listeners even know what it means? Because it's written in this other way. It's written the way people used to talk back then. Well, in case you are having a little trouble understanding it, I thought, let's just take it slowly. And let me just read the first couple of sentences of the Declaration of Independence before we hear this song. And that might help encourage you to sing along, right? If you know what the words are, what some of them are, right? And what they mean, it's going to help you understand what our friends way back when, right, were thinking. Why was this, like, probably the most important thing that Ben Franklin helped write? Let's see. The Declaration of Independence. This is how Thomas Jefferson just started it, right, with Grover's help. He said this: when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of God, nature's God, entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Wow, that was a mouthful. That was just the first sentence. but it's actually a whole paragraph. When in the course of human events, so as things go along and human, life happens and we have these events happen, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands with another, which means let's dissolve our government connections. This was how the people who were living here in the colonies were telling the king in England, we don't want to be part of your kingdom anymore. We are dissolving our connections. And the rest of that sentence just basically explains that it's pretty polite to let folks know why you're dissolving these connections instead of just walking away, right? Give some reasons, right? So that's really what the second part of that sentence says, to declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Okay, now here's the second sentence. This is my favorite. So really listen to this one if you can. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Right? So we hold these truths to be self-evident. That means it's obvious, folks, right? It's obvious. It should. I mean, when I was young, we'd say like, no duh, right? No duh. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Of course, all men, and what they meant back then was all people, right? We keep expanding the word men to include everybody, right? All of us humans are created equal, and that we have unalienable rights. And what are those rights? I bet you know them. Right? See, you're catching on. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Thanks for joining me, folks. Let's keep celebrating.
When in the course of human events, it's necessary for some to dissolve political connections, they should give reasons and declare the causes which impel them to the separation. This we know, this we know. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and life for rights and our inalienable. We declare independence from you. Goodbye, Britain. Goodbye, Britain. Oh, we declare independence from you. Goodbye, Britain. Goodbye, Britain. Oh, secure these rights, governments are instituted by men. The power to govern is from the consent of a govern. But when a long train of abuse becomes despotism, they must go. They must go. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and life for rights that are unalienable. We declare independence from you. Goodbye, Britain. Goodbye, Britain. Oh, we declare independence from you. Goodbye, Britain. Goodbye, Britain.
Goodbye, Britain.
Oh, the king has refused assent to laws. Goodbye, Britain.
Goodbye, Britain.
Goodbye, Britain.
Goodbye, Britain.
Oh, just check out all of these other causes. Goodbye, Britain.
Goodbye, Britain.
Haven't petitioned for redress, only to be met with injury. We now pledge our lives, fortune, and honors, that we are in upright, ought to be free. We declare independence from you. Goodbye, Britain.
Goodbye, Britain.
Oh, we declare independence from you. Goodbye, Britain.
Goodbye, Britain.
Oh.
Welcome back, class. I'm Mr. Betts, and that was the Declaration of Independence using almost exclusively lines from the original text, done to the weekend's Can't Feel My Face. Now, if you want to see a response to that song, why don't you check out King George sings Sam Smith's Stay With Me, because we put out new videos every Tuesday. You can follow me across all social media at Mr. Betts Class, and I'll see you next time.
Welcome back to our channel. Today, we're diving into the electrifying world of electricity. Buckle up, because it's going to be a shockingly good ride. Once upon a time, in a tiny town, lived a curious little girl named Lucy. She was always asking questions, and one day, she wondered how her nightlight worked. Why did it glow so brightly when she switched it on? Her grandfather, a wise old man, told her it was all because of a magical force called electricity. And that, my friends, is what we're going to delve into today. Electricity, a truly amazing force, powers our world. It lights up our homes, runs our gadgets, and even charges our cars. But how does it all work? Well, it's a bit like a river, but instead of water, it's flowing electrons. Now, imagine electricity as a group of ants marching in a straight line from one point to another. This is what we call direct current, or DC for short. It's electricity that flows in one direction, just like our ants. But what if the ants started marching back and forth instead of in one direction? That is alternating current, or AC. It's electricity that changes direction, like a swing going back and forth. Most of our homes are powered by AC because it's safer and can travel longer distances. But where does all this electricity come from? Power plants. These are like giant factories that make electricity. Some burn coal or gas. Others use nuclear power. And some even harness the power of the sun or wind. And did you know magnets can create electricity too? Yes, indeed. When a magnet moves around a wire, it creates a flow of electrons. That is electricity. It's like magic, isn't it? Now, let us talk about a sneaky type of electricity called static electricity. Ever rubbed a balloon on your hair and it sticks up? That is static electricity in action. But not everything allows electricity to move through it. Some things, like metals, are conductors, which let electricity pass through them easily. Others, like rubber, glass, and wood, are insulators that do not allow electricity to pass through them. Now, you might wonder who discovered this amazing force. Well, people knew about forms of electricity for thousands of years, but it was a man named Benjamin Franklin who really got the ball rolling in the mid-18th century. Benjamin Franklin was a famous American inventor and founding father. He discovered that lightning is a form of electricity by flying a kite during a thunderstorm. Franklin's invention of the lightning rod helped protect buildings from being struck by lightning. His experiments with electricity also led to advancements in the understanding of electrical currents and circuits. Let us have some fun by creating a static electricity butterfly. First, take a balloon and rub it on your hair to build up static electricity. Then, watch as the balloon magically attracts paper butterfly cutouts towards it. It's like magic. The static electricity makes the butterfly stick to the balloon, creating a cool and interactive display. Remember, knowledge is the ultimate adventure.
Well, folks, we are celebrating today. We are celebrating Ben Franklin and his electric curiosity because he was curious about all sorts of things. In fact, the reason why I am playing this seafaring music in the background here to celebrate him is because one of his early dreams was to go across the ocean, to go out to sea. And in all of his trips that he did eventually make across the pond, it's actually an ocean, but they used to say across the pond, you know, on the other side of the water, you know, to cross back and forth and back and forth. On all of his trips, he did some research even while he was supposed to probably be relaxing on a ship ride, right? I don't think he ever just like chilled out. I think he was constantly curious. Of course, one of his famous sayings was, right? We don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing. And that was actually one of his famous quotes. That was the one that brought me to doing this show about him, actually, because I stumbled upon that quote and I thought that is so amazingly true. And in fact, what else did this amazing guy do? And sure enough, I had a book on my shelf that I had picked up a long time ago. And it was a book called A Dangerous Engine by Joan Dash. And it's all about Benjamin Franklin, from scientist to diplomat. So how lucky I was to have this book, and how lucky I was to have the internet, right, where I came across his quote while I was searching for something completely different. but that's how it works, right? I mean, the internet is a very, very amazing place to go to do research. You can learn all sorts of things. But back in Benjamin's day, back then, right, in the 1700s, for him, just being able to have a printing press where he could print copies of his thoughts and then send them out to hundreds and even thousands of people and even cross the ocean with them and go everywhere on earth pretty much with his thoughts written down on that paper. Wow, that was amazing for him. That was the internet. Isn't that cool to think about? That was the internet for Ben Franklin. And what would he think if he was here now? What would he say if he was sitting right here at the microphone next to me, right? I wonder what he would say about our ability to just
you know, hop online anytime we want, right? And look up things and see what people are thinking all around the world, because we don't ever, you know, just invent things by ourselves usually. Inventions take a lot of people thinking and putting their heads together, and you think about it from the way you see it, and I'll think about it from the way I see it. And when we put our ideas together, we're going to see a whole new thing that neither one of us even saw to begin with. And then if we talk to that one over the person over there, and then that person over there, before you know it, the more we jiggle our ideas around and share them with each other, right, the more they can grow into amazing potential, like electricity. Could Benjamin Franklin ever have imagined all the things that his inventions and his experiments were going to lead to? I don't think so. I don't think he could have even imagined, because really it turns out we learned, right? Last time I spoke with you a few minutes ago about how kind of embarrassed he was about how little he really knew about what he was doing. He really didn't know much about it at all. He really didn't, you know? And so he was just fumbling along and experimenting, which means making mistakes. That's what experimenting really is all about, right? And he was also very helpful with his ideas. He did not keep them to himself. That was the biggest part, right? I mean, if he had done these experiments and then locked up all of his information in a safe and didn't let anybody ever see it. No, you can't see it. I'm going to keep this private to myself. Well, then nothing would have come of it, right? We wouldn't have all these amazing things. No, luckily, he gave his ideas away. In fact, he didn't even put a patent on his ideas. A patent is a way that people can sort of like own their idea, at least for a while, at least for tens and tens of years. You can put a patent on your idea. Well, Ben didn't even do that. He didn't even do that. He gave away his ideas, and something he'd come up with his own names for them, but then they ended up being named something else too. You know, he didn't even his names that he chose for them didn't stick, and he didn't mind. He didn't care if people changed the name of his invention, right? He invented so many things. He helped with the first fire departments that helped to put out fires. He helped build hospitals and libraries. He raised money so that people could defend themselves, right? Raised money for forts and for guns and cannons and things back during the French and Indian War. And how did he do that? He had a lottery. He held a lottery. You know, it wasn't just that he had like a ton of money that he just threw it at his ideas, because he didn't have, you know, money. At least when he was young, he was poor. So he had to kind of like build up the money that he had. So he didn't have all the money in the world to throw at his ideas, but he would get other people to join in really unique and interesting ways, right? He would get them to join in and pool their money, like in a lottery, right? To build a fort. I mean, who'd have thunk, right? Well, Benjamin Franklin thunk. And let's look at Joan's book here. She's got some other inventions he made. Let's see, what else does she have? Oh, let me read this, page 54. This is a good list of some of the things that Benjamin Franklin was curious about and invented. He was curious about comets, Scottish tunes, the aurora borealis, shells, and other remnants of sea life that were found on mountaintops far away from the salt water. He was curious about the Earth's magnetism and the possible shifting of the magnetic poles on our planet. He wondered whether dark-colored fabrics grew hot faster in the sun than light-colored ones, and he hoped to learn how ants communicate. He was convinced that they did. In fact, in his wife's kitchen, a horde of ants got into a small clay pot filled with molasses. Franklin shook out all but one of the ants and hung the pot from a string nailed to the ceiling. When the single ant that was left in the pot had eaten as much molasses as it could, it made its way up the string to the ceiling then down the wall all the way to the floor again. Within half an hour, a swarm of ants appeared, taking the same path to the molasses pot, from the floor to the wall to the ceiling, then down the string to the pot. There they finished off the molasses and left the way they came. He was certain that ants must have something like speech to communicate with each other. Wanting to know the best routes for connecting one town with another, Franklin first had to know the distance between the two points. And that was how he came to invent a distance measuring device, a kind of early odometer that was attached to the axle of his carriage wheels when he visited post offices. While living in London many years later, he met a seagoing American relative and learned about the Gulf Stream. The Gulf Stream is a river of water that flows through the Atlantic Ocean. From then on, during his several ocean crossings, he made a habit of lowering a thermometer on a string over the ship's side every morning, and from 2 to 4 times throughout the day. He was almost 80 when he put down, in one place, the rich store of information about the Gulf Stream he had collected during all those years. So what does that mean? He was almost 80 years old when he finally wrote down what he had learned from all those ocean crossings and all those notes that he had taken about the temperatures in the ocean. Wow, I'm curious. Are you curious? I'm curious about what he discovered. And you know what's so amazing is I can go and find his writing, even today, right? About 300 years later, I can go look and find Benjamin Franklin's thoughts. You know, what did he have to say about his discoveries of the Gulf Stream and all of that research that he did? Well, thank goodness, right? Thank goodness he lived to be over 80 years old, because I think right around the time he was in his 80s, he helped write the Constitution for the United States of America. So he was still a very, very busy guy into his 80s. And thank goodness he wrote it down so that we could know what he had learned, right? Well, it turns out that he may have written that down, and he wrote down, helped write down the Declaration of Independence, and he wrote down a lot of other things. But guess what I found out? He did not actually write down his most famous experiment for himself. It turns out that in order for us to understand what happened with the key and the kite and the lightning, we had to rely on other people's reports, because he never wrote down his own account. Or if he did, maybe it got lost. I mean, that's possible, right? If he wrote it down with his quill pen and ink on a piece of paper, well, that piece of paper could have easily been lost, right? How amazing, folks. It's amazing that I'm talking with you today, and I'm really happy that you're joining me for Amy's Kids Show. We are celebrating Benjamin Franklin's electric curiosity. Let's keep celebrating, folks. Thanks for joining me.
January 17, 1706. Benjamin Franklin had 16 siblings.
John, Sam, Peter, Sarah. Oh, James, will you gather the rest of your siblings for me?
Yes, I will, Mother. Thomas, Hannah, Mary.
Come on, gather round. Meet your new baby brother.
What's his name?
Benjamin. His name's Benjamin Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin begins to love books and reading. He started work at his brother James' printing shop. James wanted him to only sell newspapers, but Ben wanted to write and be published.
Brother, I have another article for you to print in your newspaper.
Uh-huh, and who is this one from?
Me? Me friend, Silence Dogood. Yes, Miss Silence Dogood.
Good, good. People are looking forward to this article. Now run along and sell more newspapers.
My plan is working. My brother doesn't want to print my articles, but he will print them if he thinks they're by Miss Silence Dogood.
What? You've been Miss Silence Dogood this entire time? I am tired of your pranks, Benjamin. Now run along, out of my print shop. Out. Out.
He left his brother's print shop and went to Pennsylvania, where he became very successful. He made the first pair of swimming flippers.
No, not flippers for your feet, flippers for your hands.
He started the first library.
The Junto Club Lending Library is open for business. Now everyone can enjoy reading.
He invented bifocals.
Aha! Now I can see far away and up close.
On his travels to Europe, he made the first map of the Gulf Stream.
If we take the Gulf Stream, this river in the ocean will make our voyage much faster.
He took over the Pennsylvania Gazette and owned his own newspaper.
Extra, extra! Read all about it! Get your Pennsylvania Gazette here! Oh, and don't forget your copy of Poor Richard's Almanac, most popular publication in the colonies. Ha ha!
He even started the first volunteer fire company organization.
Oh, the lightning just hit another house. It caused a fire. We need men on this right away.
We're on it, Mr. Franklin.
There they go. The Union Fire Company. I'm so proud of them. Hey men! I'm working on something to take care of those fires.
Benjamin Franklin started to study lightning, and he printed lightning experiments in his newspaper.
Editor?
Yes, Mr. Franklin?
I need you to write down an experiment I've been pondering.
I'm on it, Mr. Franklin. Ready.
If one were to fly a kite with a metal key attached in a thunderstorm, lightning would strike the kite and produce an electric spark. Thus, lightning produces electricity. No. Lightning is electricity.
Too many buildings were catching on fire because of lightning. So Benjamin Franklin invented a way to fix this.
There we go. Now I've stuck this long piece of metal to the side of the house. Now it must be long enough to where it can reach into the air, but long enough so that it may stick into the ground. Now, with it in the ground, whenever lightning strikes the top, zoom! The electrical current will go straight into the ground. Thus, no more house fires. I shall call this invention the Franklin Rod.
It is now called the Lightning Rod.
Oh, very well then. The Lightning Rod.
Benjamin Franklin was a great inventor and a good person. He used his writing to set such a good example for others. He was asked to help unite the colonies into one country.
In order to be a good person, one must be sincere and honest, know what is right and wrong, and be humble in all...
Mr. Franklin! I'm looking for a Mr. Benjamin Franklin.
Yes, I'm Benjamin Franklin.
We read your writings and we agree with your beliefs. The Continental Congress would like to make you an official Pennsylvania delegate. If you accept, I would like your help with something.
Well, of course I accept. What is it then you need help with?
It's a document called the Declaration of Independence.
Catchy name. I'll check it out. Oh, and what did you say your name was again?
Thomas Jefferson.
Wait, Thomas Jefferson? As in the Thomas Jefferson?
Ben Franklin signed the Declaration of Independence, which made the colonies a new united country.
Ha! I hereby instate this Declaration of Independence. We will be our own country soon. Would anyone like to sign?
I would.
Not only did Ben Franklin sign the Declaration of Independence, he also helped with the Constitution of the United States of America.
I, James Madison, have completed the draft of the Constitution.
Oh, may I see it?
Yes, yes, of course.
Well, I think that this is as close to perfect as we're going to get.
Yes, yes, it is.
This shall be the Constitution to the new United States.
Woo-hoo!
Woo-hoo indeed.
Indeed.
Well, there you have it, folks. Benjamin Franklin, co-author of the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States of America, his own almanacs, his own printing press, and his scientific writings, right? All the things that he was learning, he shared them, and he gave them away, and he spread them near and far, even if he sometimes felt a little bit embarrassed about his ideas and unsure about whether his ideas were being received well, right? Were people just laughing at him across the ocean? Did they just think, oh, that silly Benjamin, what, he doesn't even know what he's talking about, right? Well, no, in fact, even though there were folks over there who had in some cases already discovered what he thought was a brand new idea, they still learned a lot from what he was sharing. The other bits of things that he was sharing that they had never even thought of themselves, right? And then they crisscross applesauced with Ben by sending their ideas back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. That's communication, folks. And I think that's one of the most amazing things that Benjamin Franklin's discovery of electricity has helped to do here in our beautiful human world, right? We can communicate even better than ever. That's what I think Benjamin Franklin would say if he was sitting here at the microphone next to me. I keep almost expecting his voice to come across, right? When I say that, I'm almost expecting him to answer, but I think he would say something about how amazingly wonderful it is that we can communicate so easily nowadays with so many people. He would have loved it. He would have had so much fun with it, don't you think? I mean, he even invented an instrument. I didn't even have time to tell you about all of his inventions, right? But he liked music. He was a creative guy. He was a fun guy, right? So he would have had a lot of fun with this electricity and all of the ways that we can communicate. But unfortunately, we don't have any recordings of his voice. So actually, I have no idea what his voice would sound like. Right, because we didn't even have recorders back then because we hadn't invented them yet. Wow, folks. I hope you're starting to catch on here, all you kids listening out there, about why it's so important to be curious and communicate, because we need you, right? We need you and all of your amazing ideas. So we need you to learn from others and then also share what you've got, because we got to keep this whole amazing invention called humanity going, right, folks? We need every one of you. Thanks for joining me, because you are the greatest.